Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date Tuesday, May 23rd, 2013. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Dave Shaw, just that big teddy bear. Local broadcast newsman recalled for depth of his dedication. This article is written by Tom Kachik and Mary Schenk and is based out of Champaign. There were nights during Central Illinois snowstorms when Dave Shaw, the news director at WCIA-TV, would sleep at the station to make certain that someone was there to report on and anchor the morning news. That was the depth of his dedication to the news and the station his colleagues recalled Monday, on the day that the Champaign native and one-time state high school speech competition winner passed away at the age of 75. I'm not sure he ever missed a day because of health or weather over the years. He was a person who did everything in the newsroom and was willing to do anything for the station, said Carl Caldwell, who began work at WCIA in 1973, about 10 years after Mr. Shaw began there. But he was good at everything. That's what made him unique, his ability to do everything well and to be liked and well-respected by his colleagues. Dick Adams, whose time at WCIA nearly matched Mr. Shaw, said he was the consummate TV newscaster and news director. I remember him saying once that he had offers to go to other markets, but he thought folks in Central Illinois deserved a high-quality news product, and he felt the need to give that to them, Adams said. Jennifer Roscoe, who was hired by Mr. Shaw as an intern in 1992 and continues to anchor WCIA newscasts, said his commitment to the station was boundless. The stories are out there that if there was a snowstorm, that he would sleep in the lobby just to make sure that somebody was there to do the news. He did every role. It didn't matter how small, she said. He was the news director, and he would empty the garbage cans. He would do writing. He would fill in wherever there needed to be someone. He would anchor. He would produce. He was so talented. Mr. Shaw's hard work instilled in me this work ethic. He was always willing to give 110%, so he brought you up to his level. I never wanted to disappoint him. It made me work harder at my job and learn the business and learn what news is. He gave me the foundation that I am so grateful for. The lessons that he taught me, I hear myself using those same words and lessons from the new people at Channel 3. I channel Dave every single day, and I'm so lucky to have worked for him. And Mr. Shaw was like a second father to Roscoe, she said, because her father died when she was a student at the University of Illinois. He elevated all of us. We all wanted to do our very best every day because, honestly, I didn't want to disappoint my dad. I didn't want to disappoint Dave. I wanted to make him proud. John Paul, now University of Illinois television news instructor who worked under Mr. Shaw and succeeded him as news director in 1999, called Mr. Shaw the best mentor I've ever had. He cited Mr. Shaw's personal sacrifice for the sake of the people he worked with. There are so many people who can say Dave Shaw is the guy who made a difference in my career. Paul Davis, who worked with Mr. Shaw at WCIA from 1963 to 1980, said, "There's probably nobody I respected more than Dave Shaw. You know how you feel like if you can't finish your sentence and someone can finish it for you? That's the way it was for the two of us." Although Mr. Shaw started in 1963 as a street reporter, he soon was promoted. He immediately fit in and was comfortable, and he wrote real good copy. He wrote a lot of the copy I read in the early years, said Davis, an Effingham native and longtime WCIA anchorman. Eventually, Mr. Shaw anchored the morning and noon news coverage, and Davis had the evening and nighttime newscasts. We worked it out that if anything happened overnight, the police had my number until 3 a.m., and then they had his number to call, David recalled. One night, when there was a big fire across from the courthouse in Urbana, we called each other on big stories just to make sure we were covered. I talked to him, and he said, "What time is it anyway?" And I looked at my clock in the dark, and I said, "It's 10 until 5. And he said, "Oh, I've got to get up and go to the trustees meeting in Chicago." That afternoon, I heard him walking down the hall when he got back, and he says, "Where's Davis? I'm going to kill him." I said, "Here I am. What's the matter?" he said. "I got up and had coffee and got ready to go, and it wasn't 10 to 5. It was 25 after 2. Karen York, now the office manager at WDWS, began working with Mr. Shaw in the mid-1990s. She called him a voice of calm in a sometimes frenetic TV newsroom. The biggest thing is how he, like everyone else says, was so even-keeled and very helpful to everyone, said York, who had been hired as a newsroom secretary. He taught me how to edit and other things. I knew nothing, absolutely nothing about television, and he taught me all of that, she said. I never saw him angry. I remember his hugs. We'd have something good happen, or when my mom passed away, he was there. He would hug always. He was just that big teddy bear type of guy. Mr. Shaw left WCIA in 1999. He got bounced by Nexstar, the station's new owner, because he made more than $100 a week, joked Davis, and quickly went to WDWS. There he remained for more than 15 years, even anchoring the station's election coverage last November, although he was fighting the cancer that eventually claimed his life. Mr. Shaw also remained active in community affairs, including the Champaign-Urbana Symphony, which his father, Verrilton, that's Verrilton C. Shaw, had helped fund, or found, excuse me, the Kiwanis Club, and the Tom Jones Challenger League. The baseball league for physically and mentally challenged youngsters is sponsored by the Champaign-Urbana Kiwanis Club and named for the late sports anchor at WCIA, who spent most of his life in a wheelchair. Rick Scholl, S-C-H-O-E-L-L, said he and Mr. Shaw helped run and promote the league for several years. I was interested in coaching Little League. I had no real experience working with mentally and physically challenged youngsters. I didn't know how I would respond, Scholl says. I'm very grateful. It's been one of the richest experiences of my life. He said Mr. Shaw was one of the most genuine people I know. He embodies what the league is all about, to allow people who otherwise might not have an opportunity to experience baseball in pure joy, to give them an environment to do that. Roscoe, who has a special needs daughter who plays in the Challenger League, said, I was lucky that in our second lives together, after he had left WCIA, that I saw him on Saturdays out at the baseball games. That just shows what kind of a person he is. He wasn't just a good person in the newsroom. He was invested in the community and especially with these special needs kids. Mr. Shaw was honored with the Associated Press Mark Twain Lifetime Achievement Award, named to the Eastern Illinois University Hall of Fame, and designated a lifetime member of the Illinois News Broadcasters Association. In 2012, he received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Mid-America Emmy Association for his dedication to the news industry of Central Illinois. The next headline reads, University of Illinois, weighty topics on tap at retreat. Free speech tops issues for board study. This article is written by Julie Wirth and is based out of Urbana. With controversial speakers running into opposition at colleges across the country, including the University of Illinois, free speech and campus culture will be front and center at a U of I retreat in July. President Tim Killeen said Monday the agenda for the U of I Board of Trustees annual retreat will include an in-depth look at the topic and several others that are, quote-unquote, on everybody's radar screen right now. Just last week, the U of I's Carl Woese Institute for Genomic Biology dropped plans for a talk by Nobel laureate James Watson, who co-discovered the structure of DNA, but has been castigated by fellow scientists for his discredited views on race and intelligence. Watson had initially reached out to the U of I Institute to give a narrowly focused scientific talk about his cancer research in conjunction with a planned visit to a colleague's lab, according to Institute Director Jean Robinson. But other faculty at the Institute objected because of Watson's history of racist and sexist comments, and the lecture was dropped. No date has yet been set. Killeen, who talked with the News Gazette before a faculty meeting Monday, said that neither he nor Chancellor Robert Jones was involved in the decision, which transpired fairly quickly. He said he appreciated the concerns about Watson's views, but added, I think we've got to be very careful, this university, to make sure that we really are open to free expression. This situation was somewhat distinct from incidents at other campuses, where protesters have shouted down controversial political speakers or prevented them from appearing. This is an icon of science who is close to being 90 years old, who is talking about a scientific presentation, Killeen said. Organizers felt that the science presentation would have been difficult to manage because of the controversy surrounding Watson's other views, Killeen said. I think you have to recognize that we're university for all, but I can respect some of the rationale that was brought to the table, he said. He said he wasn't in the loop for the decision, but added that he dislikes disinvitations. I'm a fervent believer in the First Amendment, he said. There are going to be lots of different conversations about lots of issues that we ought to be exposing our students to, and of course, the best approach to speech that you disagree with is to provide speech that makes your case effectively, maybe in a different setting, but we've got to do that in a respectful way. I think this is another of those issues, he said. Killeen said he has invited several national speakers to the retreat to address three topics, campus culture and freedom of expression, immigration policies and globalization, and civic engagement, not just voting and political participation, but how we perform our land-grant mission, quote-unquote. We want an authentic University of Illinois voice in all of the above, he said. Over the past several months, the university has been examining a range of issues in terms of mitigating potential risk, including student safety, free speech, and assembly, and how to deal with self-inflicted problems that might pop up out of nowhere, so we're best prepared for these kinds of things, he said. The next headline reads, the latest alleged abduction attempt in Urbana. Despite two developments Monday, unanswered questions remain about a Saturday night incident in which a man allegedly got out of a van and chased two 12-year-olds, grabbing the girl by the arm before she escaped. Tim Mitchell has written this article. It's based out of Urbana, and here's some more information. In custody, Todd D. Milner, 51, whose last known residence was in the 300 block of Glen Drive Urbana, was arrested on an outstanding and unrelated warrant for assault, the Champaign County Sheriff's Office said Monday. To be clear, the office added, Milner has not been charged with any offenses relating to the Saturday incident. Probe continues. The investigation into the incident involving the juveniles continues, the Sheriff's Office said. According to court records, Milner has previous felony convictions in Champaign County for battery in 1993, possession of a controlled substance in 2000, and two instances of domestic battery with a previous domestic battery in 1997 and 2005. And vehicle found. Earlier Monday, authorities found the white van described by witnesses as the vehicle from which the man exited at the intersection of Glen Drive and East Illinois in unincorporated Urbana. The suspect vehicle has been located, seized, and is being processed, the sheriff's office announced via press release. And now a quick look at our weather forecast provided to us by Greg, G-R-E-G, Soulj, S-O-U-L-J-E, on the weather front. Here's our forecast for the next few days. Today, 69 degrees, variable cloudiness, occasional showers before noon and again in the afternoon. Overnight, cloudy, a couple of showers likely. Wednesday, the high is 65, the low is 53. Cloudy with occasional showers and gusty. Overnight, a lingering shower or two in spots. Thursday, partly cloudy. It will be a high of 70 and a low of 52. Friday, the high will be 75, the low will be 56. Increasing clouds, a shower and thunderstorm in spots late. Saturday, the high will be 79, the low will be 63. Variable cloudiness, a couple of showers and thunderstorms in spots before noon and in the afternoon. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of editor Jim Rosso. The participation in hashtag LiveLikeLuke fundraisers continues to spotlight the good in so many area high school students, coaches, and parents. At Monday's Centennial Champaign Central playoff softball game, the Rivals presented a check for $1,000 to the parents of Luke Miller, a Centennial student who died in March. The Chargers and Maroons raised $500 each ahead of and during last week's varsity and junior varsity softball games, which had the teams wearing red and white uniform tops, Luke loved the Cardinals, selling flowers and donating concessions revenue. We're crosstown rivals, Centennial senior Aislinn Henderson said Monday, but during that game, we put our rivalry aside because Luke was such a good friend to all of us. We played as one team. And here's some stats from the online audience for NewsGazette.com. What was trending last week at NewsGazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday, saw 1,347,410 page views. The three top stories. One, Muhammad Seymour student killed in Douglas County wreck. Two, Monticello woman hits $4 million lottery jackpot. Three, first look, Portillo's in Champaign. Three top sports stories included one, roster to fill, Underwood also looking for leaders. Two, Tillman lands at Missouri. Three, Tillman to Missouri, what it means. The three top videos, one, dust storm at I-70 on I-72. Two, Cubby Conversation from May 15th, 2017. And three, Friday on the Farm from May 19th, 2017. The three top photo galleries, one, Jacob Hamilton Vigil. Two, News Gazette Honor Roll Track Meet 2017. And three, Unity Graduation 2017. And now in area history. In 1917, H.S. Capron, that's C-A-P-R-O-N, who was one of the leaders to have the federal government locate an aviation field at Bonneville, received word from Washington, D.C., that the War Department had chosen a site in Rantoul. The notice said that the Rantoul site offered greater advantages than Bonneville's. It did not offer details. In 1967, gun control legislation was halfway through the legislature. By a vote of 48-7, the Senate approved a measure sponsored by Senate Republican leader W. Russell Arrington of Evanston. The legislation would prohibit the sale or gift of a gun or ammunition to anyone not licensed and would prohibit the licensing to narcotics addicts, anyone with a felony conviction within 5 years, juveniles convicted of a misdemeanor, mental patients institutionalized within the past 5 years, or persons mentally retarded. In 2002, the Illinois Commerce Commission approved a deal between the University of Illinois and Illinois Power to alter a contract the two parties have had since 1967. The agreement provided that the U of I would purchase electricity from Illinois Power through 2005 to augment the electricity it produced at the Abbott Power Plant on campus. In international history, today's highlight, on May 23, 1967, Egypt closed the Straits of Tiran, or T-I-R-A-N, to Israeli shipping, an action which helped precipitate war between Israel and its Arab neighbors the following month. And on this date in 1430, Joan of Arc was captured by the Burgundians, who sold her to the English. And in 1934, bank robbers Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker were shot to death in a police ambush in Bienville, that's B-I-E-N-ville, Parish, Louisiana. The next headline reads, Urbana City Council, Board Unpacks Budget Proposal. Vote supports buying lot near police station, library touts 2016 stats. This article is written by Natalie Wickman and is based out of Urbana. As the Urbana City Council prepares to vote on its proposed budget for the upcoming fiscal year, the public arts and library departments discussed Monday where they fit into the plan. Mayor Diane Marlin presented the proposed budget last week, and it came with cuts, raising the food and beverage tax to 0.5% and voluntary separation incentives for non-union city employees. She said the city needs those measures to regain financial stability from the ongoing Carle Foundation Hospital court case and state budget impasse. Residents can comment on the proposed budget at a June 5th public hearing in the city building. Council members will take a final budget vote on June 19th. Public Arts estimates its next fiscal year expenditures to be $65,330. The city's economic development manager, Brandon Boyes, B-O-Y-S, said there are no upcoming cuts to public arts funding, but parts of that money will no longer be coming from the city's general fund. He said that change can be maintained long-term, can't be maintained long-term, but can last for about 3 years, which gives the city time to discuss possible adjustments. The Urbana Public Library reported 2016 statistics of more than 837,000 items checked out, 45,500 people using the public computers, and 390,000 overall visitors. The department is planning its fiscal year 2018 expenses to be about $4,152,735. In other business, the council members gave their unanimous initial approval to the city purchasing a vacant lot near the 2103 South Philo Road Police Station for $41,000. Urbana Fire Chief Brian Neitlinger said he would like to use a lot for a possible update and expansion of the station there. A proposed facility study, which is included in the proposed budget for the upcoming fiscal year, will determine what a building in the lot could be used for. Neitlinger said his idea is to use it for extra equipment and an ambulance. The next headline reads, Springfield, developer wants casino downtown. This is written by the collectively by the Associated Press out of Springfield. A real estate developer in Springfield has floated grand plans for downtown Springfield. The crux of Chris Stone's plan is a 1,200-position casino in the capital city to generate tax revenue and draw tourists to the places Abraham Lincoln lived and worked. Stone runs EMS Midwest. It's a business consulting and properties company. A news release Monday says Stone wants a casino to be part of the legislature's discussions about expanded gambling before its scheduled adjournment May 31st. The Senate has adopted a contentious plan to add 6 casinos statewide. Stone envisions developing a vacant block north of the Executive Mansion with a downtown college campus and open space for ice skating, concerts, and dog park. There would be retail space, a movie theater, and 30 apartments. The next headline reads, Apollo 11, Woman's Relic to be Auctioned. This is based out of Chicago and written by the Associated Press. An Illinois woman's bag of moon dust, brought to Earth by Apollo 11 astronauts, will be auctioned off later this year. Nancy Lee Carlson of suburban Chicago bought the moon dust for $995 at a 2015 government auction. After she sent it to Johnson Space Center for authentication, officials deemed it government property and confiscated it. The government said the rare artifact, quote-unquote, was mistakenly sold. A judge ruled in December he didn't have the authority to reverse the sale. And Chicago Housing. Project renews interest in program, is another headline based out of Chicago and written by the Associated Press. Residents, high-rise a threat to area's character. Officials of a 30-year-old housing agency originally intended to stop white flight in northwest Chicago say it's seeing renewed interest, partly due to anxiety about a proposed apartment complex. The fight over the building project has resurfaced some of the same arguments over neighborhood character, integration, and racial discrimination that occurred when the Northwest Home Equity Assurance Program launched in the late 1980s, the Chicago Tribune reported. It allows members to get property appraisals and pays for shortfalls when owners sell their houses as long as they continue living there for at least 5 years. Agency Director Robin Larson said 30 people have either signed up or asked to update their property's value since November. We went from very little registration to, oh my gosh, Larson said. The agency has stockpiled nearly $10 million because it only has guaranteed the value of residents' houses a few times thanks to increasing home values and a loophole that meant the housing collapse didn't qualify homeowners for payments. The proposed building project in Jefferson Park has drawn big crowds of irate neighbors to meetings at Alderman John Arena's 45th Ward office as well as to City Hall. The seven-story complex would have 80 units rented at below market rate, with 20 specifically for people with Chicago Housing Authority vouchers. A group of homeowners called Northwest Side Unite say the building would be too tall for the neighborhood. Their group has sued, saying Arena settlement with the developer violates city law. The group has pushed back against accusations that opponents of the project are racist. "We are not discriminatory people," said Tricia Cannon, K-A-N-N-O-N, a member of the group. "We care deeply. We are not racist simply because we oppose a development." And again, out of Chicago, by the Associated Press, here's an article. The headline is, "Nonprofit's Chief Accused of Using Grant Funds on Self." A trial is underway for the head of a Chicago nonprofit who is accused of using a $60,000 Illinois grant to help impoverished youth for personal expenses. Franshaun, that's F-R-A-N-S-H-U-A-N, Miles, M-Y-L-E-S, is charged with wire fraud and mail fraud stemming from her work at the now-defunct Divine Praise, Inc. She has pleaded not guilty. Federal prosecutors say the 39-year-old Miles started using grants for personal gain almost immediately after the money showed up in the nonprofit's bank account in 2011. They allege she used the funds for shopping sprees at shoe outlets and Home Depot and to pay a car loan as well as utility bills and debts. In his opening statement Monday, defense attorney Michael Petro, P-E-T-R-O, said Miles may be guilty of sloppy bookkeeping, but no proof exists that she stole any money. The next headline reads, Champaign School Board, principal excited to get started. Group protests ouster of facilities director. This article is written by Tim Mitchell and is based out of Champaign. When Centennial High School students return this fall, they'll be greeted by a Purple Heart-winning new principal. On Monday night, the Unit 4 School Board unanimously voted to appoint Brian Riegler, R-I-E-G-L-E-R, as Greg Johnson's successor at Centennial. "I'm really excited to get on board to start," said Riegler, a decorated Navy veteran who won both a Bronze Star and a Purple Heart. "Centennial has a great staff, and I am impressed with the people I have met so far." Riegler comes to Unit 4 from one of the state's largest high schools, Waukegan, with an enrollment of about 4,600 students. Centennial has about 1,350 students. "I want to be in a smaller school, and I like being in a district where there is more than one high school," Riegler said. "I look forward to having contact with the kids. When you work at a high school as large as Waukegan, you are so removed from the kids. I want to know the kids and know the parents." He takes over on July 1st, replacing Johnson, who after 7 years in the job is leaving to become assistant superintendent for curriculum and instruction of the Oak Park and River Forest High School District. Riegler, a combat veteran, served two tours in Iraq and one tour in Afghanistan. In 1989, he was commissioned as an intelligence officer in the U.S. Navy Reserves, retiring with the rank of commander later this year. He began his career in education in 1995 as a high school history teacher at Thornton Fractional North. He has worked exclusively in high schools, with other stops at Plainfield, history teacher and dean of students, Morris Community, assistant principal, Hersher as principal, Crete Moni, principal, and Waukegan, principal since 2012. Other appointments. Also approved Monday by the school board, Jeffrey Dobbs, D-O-B-B-S, as principal at Dr. Howard Elementary. After a 16-year career as an elementary teacher in Bloomington, he joined Dr. Howard in 2015 as assistant principal. Lindsay Trout, as the Actions Alternative to Suspension Program Administrator. She has been a school social worker in Urbana's early childhood program since 2014, following 5 years as a social worker in Villa Grove Schools. Jeron, J-E-R-O-N, Blood, as associate principal at Edison Middle School. A former special education teacher at Centennial, he was Edison's assistant principal from 2014 to 2016 and served as interim associate principal this school year. Jesse Guzman, as associate principal, a position she held on an interim basis this school year, and summer school principal of Jefferson Middle School. And Stratton Elementary assistant principal Amy Blomberg, and Urbana facilitator of teachers Christina Ray, as assistant principal / summer school principals at Garden Hills Elementary. Protest held. About 60 people picketed outside the Mellon Administration Center on Monday to protest the dismissal of Tim Popovich as facilities director. In all my years, I've never heard negative things about Tim Popovich, that's P-O-P-O-V-I-C-H, said Central High School teacher Carolyn Codes, K-O-D-E-S, or Codes. He works hard and is unbelievably ethical. He saves money and has good humor. When we do this to someone like Tim, we look bad. I have no idea why you would choose to lose such a valuable employee. Popovich joined Unit 4 in 1998, working as a custodian and head custodian, then assistant director of maintenance, before being elevated to facilities director in 2015. The next headline reads, Veterans Monument to debut in Homer. This is an article based out of Homer and is written by Nora Mayberry Daniels for The Leader. About 2 years' worth of planning will come to fruition at 2 p.m. Saturday when the new Homer Veterans Monument is unveiled on Memorial Day weekend. Kim Graham, who approached the village board with the idea in 2015, said she spent a lot of time researching other towns' tributes, then went to Adams Memorial to finalize the design. She also helped raise funds to nearly $20,000 that was needed for the project, which she said was important to bring to Homer. There were and are a lot of veterans from this area, she said. A monument honoring Paul Lewis, the Homer native held hostage in Iran for 444 days, was moved from Homer Village Park to be included at the monument near Village Hall. After Saturday's dedication, at which Mayor Ray Cunningham, Homer New Life Church of Faith Pastor C.W. Greer, and American Legion members will speak, a small reception will be held inside Village Hall. Meanwhile, the Homer American Legion Auxiliary will hold its annual Memorial Day Smorgasbord event at Village Hall on Monday, following the 11 a.m. program at Homer GAR Cemetery. And lastly, around the area, board keeps basketball co-op alive. Out of Bement, school board members approved the continuation of the high school boys basketball cooperative agreement with Cerro Gordo. Out of Loda, the Loda Sanitary District's attorney, Bob Mattinson, said he has prepared the basic documents that are needed to wrap everything up to have the district dissolved. Approval of those documents could happen during district trustees' next meeting set for 5:15 p.m. today at the Loda Firehouse. And lastly, out of Rantoul, a wine tasting party will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. today at the Rantoul VFW Post located at 675 North Ohio to benefit Community Service Center. The evening will include wine tasting, snacks, a 50-50 raffle, and live music featuring John Copes and Suzanne Warner. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette dated for this date, Tuesday, May 23rd, 2017. We'll continue with part two of the News Gazette shortly. Thank you very much for listening, and have a wonderful day.